Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, September 19th, 2017. President Trump talks about the famine in South Sudan in his UN General Assembly address.
The United States continues to lead the world in humanitarian assistance, including famine prevention and relief in South Sudan, Somalia, and northern Nigeria and Yemen.
And a USAID program in South Sudan is suspended.
The idea was that it was going to continue. But because of the political situation in the country, the USAID has decided to pull out because they are now going to concentrate on relief aid more than on capacity building.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. In a speech to UN Security Council ambassadors in April, U.S. President Donald Trump said member states must come together to ensure that no one nation shoulders a disproportionate share of the burden militarily or financially. Today, in his first speech to the UN General Assembly, President Trump focused on his America First campaign theme that was so popular with his base before he was elected president.
In America, the people govern, the people rule, and the people are sovereign. I was elected not to take power, but to give power to the American people where it belongs. In foreign affairs, we are renewing this founding principle of sovereignty. Our government's first duty is to its people, to our citizens, to serve their needs, to ensure their safety, to preserve their rights, and to defend their values. As President of the United States, I will always put America first, just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first.
President Trump said all leaders should follow the same principle while working with member states.
All responsible leaders have an obligation to serve their own citizens, and the nation state remains the best vehicle for elevating the human condition. But making a better life for our people also requires us to work together in close harmony and unity to create a more safe and peaceful future for all people.
President Trump said UN peacekeeping missions are helping to stabilize conflict-prone countries in Africa. And he noted how the United States is leading the way in the important work UN agencies are doing to fight famine in Africa, including South Sudan.
The United Nations and African Union led peacekeeping missions to have invaluable contributions in stabilizing conflicts in Africa. The United States continues to lead the world in humanitarian assistance, including famine prevention and relief in South Sudan, Somalia, and northern Nigeria and Yemen. We have invested in better health and opportunity all over the world through programs like PEPFAR, which funds AIDS relief.
The U.S. president went on to say the U.S. has also led the way in funding important health programs in Africa.
The president's malaria initiative, the global health security agenda, the global fund to end modern slavery, and the Women Entrepreneurs Finance Initiative, part of our commitment to empowering women all across the globe.
On the resettlement of refugees, President Trump supported the idea of keeping refugees in their regional area rather than moving them to places like the United States.
For the cost of resettling one refugee in the United States, we can assist more than 10 in their home region. Out of the goodness of our hearts, we offer financial assistance to hosting countries in the region, and we support recent agreements of the G20 nations that will seek to host refugees as close to their home countries as possible. This is the safe, responsible, and humanitarian approach.
The U.S. president said, quote, "In the Western Hemisphere, we have learned that uncontrolled migration is deeply unfair to both the sending and receiving countries," end quote, saying it reduces pressure on the sending countries to pursue needed political and economic reform while draining them of human capital, and puts undue pressure on the receiving countries to fund what he called uncontrolled migration, which he said is shouldered overwhelmingly by low-income citizens. But President Trump also praised the UN for addressing the problems that cause people to flee from their homes. Nearly 20 South Sudanese students have so far successfully completed a master's program in education that was funded by the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID. But the scholarship program in Juba, aimed at boosting literacy rates in South Sudan, has been halted by the Trump administration, according to South Sudanese government officials. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
32-year-old Peter Manyang was awarded a scholarship to pursue a master's degree in education. He says he is proud to have completed his master's program at University of Juba.
I've really got a lot of benefit from this program. It has really shaped my ideas. As a teacher already, the way how I used to look at education on different perspectives, it has really shaped my understanding, and right now I'm professionally fit in whatever I may do in future regarding education in South Sudan. And as a teacher, I've really understood how can we effectively improve teaching and learning in our schools.
Another beneficiary of the scholarship program, 38-year-old Ross Hezekiah Jonathan, says the program has equipped her with the knowledge to improve South Sudan's education sector.
The program is very important to my life because it has given me more skills, and I'm now specialized in the field of education. I gain knowledge, and then specifically academic writing, improvement in English language. So the program is really very, very, very important because I've learned a lot, and there is much improvement in the field of knowledge.
Manyang and Jonathan are two of the 19 students who benefited from the 2 years master's program. They were part of the second batch of students sponsored by the USAID in a program implemented by the University of Juba in partnership with Indiana University. South Sudanese education officials say the USAID program has been suspended. A reason was not given, but the South Sudan conflict is moving into its fourth year after both warring parties have repeatedly violated the 2015 peace agreement. Vienna Kakole, ministerial advisor in the Ministry of Higher Education, says USAID officials informed the South Sudan government it was suspending funding for the program. Although Kakole did not explain why USAID stopped supporting the program, failure by South Sudanese leaders to stop the conflict apparently contributed to the decision. Kakole says the move leaves a gap in the uphill fight against the illiteracy in South Sudan.
We fought for 21 years with our neighbors, the Sudan. We reached an agreement. And during that time, we even built our capacity. I'm one of the beneficiaries of being trained during the war.
Michael K. Morrow is the U.S. Deputy Chief of Mission in South Sudan. He says the program was designed to promote peace building and social cohesion. Edward Momo is the Dean of the College of Education at the University of Juba. He says suspending the program will affect South Sudan's education sector.
The idea was that it was going to continue. But because of the political situation in the country, the USAID has decided to pull out because they are now going to concentrate, according to them, on relief aid more than on capacity building. We're being lumped together with the government, whereas we are actually not. But because of the crisis here, the continuation of the war, the thing has come to an abrupt end, which we hope those who have funded us will revise the decision, reverse it, and then we'll continue to get a grant in any form. Because without it, even if it's, we are left alone, we struggle in certain areas.
USAID suspended all of its development projects after fighting broke out in late 2013 in South Sudan. The agency shifted its focus in supporting humanitarian efforts to feeding the millions of hungry South Sudanese. The South Sudan Minister of General Education recently said 73% of the country's population cannot read or write. Deng Deng Hock called for more support from donors to fight illiteracy in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A nonprofit called the Winnipeg Women's Resource Center in Boer also helps young women learn how to earn a living for themselves and their families. The center provides free adult education, including classes in English, reading and writing, and business skills. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Boer that women who learned practical skills at the center say they are grateful for the program.
Nyanthin Jill is only 29 years old, but already a mother of five. Jill says her life improved after earning a certificate in tailoring and design from Winnipeg Women's Resource Center. Speaking in Dinka, Jill says she now owns a tailoring shop at Maror Market.
After I graduated from Winnipeg Center, I later stuck because there was nowhere to start. No machines and no materials. So I had to struggle on my own in order to hire a tailoring machine. Now I'm working here in the market. I design clothes and I do the sewing. This has improved my life. I can now provide food and clothing to my children, and also some of them are now able to go to school with my support.
28-year-old Anai Mabur, another beneficiary of the program, says she too has learned practical skills that have allowed her to earn a living. Speaking in Dinka, Mabur says she appreciates what the Winnipeg Women Resource Center has given her.
I got my knowledge from Winnipeg, and now I am able to support myself and my two children. I do not need to ask my husband for money to buy small things like soap and other things that women need. With the little I am earning here, I can just buy for myself. I just thank the Winnipeg.
Atong Mayoliju, who coordinates programs at the Winnipeg Women's Resource Center, says the goals of the center is to empower women in Boer.
Women, they are the majority, bringing up the children. If they are idle, they don't have anything. It seems like the community will destroy. But if they are doing something for themselves, like income, they are generating now money for themselves, for their children. In the future, will be for all.
Mayol says about 24 women recently graduated from the center after having completed 6 months of training in tailoring and designing. The center also runs classes for adults who have dropped out of the school for one reason or another. Denkon, a literacy instructor at the center, says despite their success, women in Boer who earn a certificate from the center still face numerous challenges.
They don't get machines to sew. If they don't have machines, that means that the knowledge that we have injected to them can be easily forgotten. Coming to elderly circles, is dealing with women who have been traumatized by this violence, war, rape, loss of their loved ones. Elderly circle is targeting this woman to encourage them how to speak up. We need to target these women who are in rural areas. The issue of transport for the instructor to go there is very difficult to go and deal with such cases.
Kone is calling on well-wishers to support the program so that they can reach as many women as possible in remote areas. The center was founded by Rebecca Deng, a South Sudanese-Canadian who lives in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Rebecca solicited funds from the South Sudanese community in Manitoba and other Canadian benefactors to run the center's program in Bor. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng reporting from Bor.
The governments of South Sudan and of Japan have launched a program this week that offers skills like baking to women who have been displaced by the fighting between government and rebel forces in South Sudan. The program in Juba teaches about 250 women how to bake cakes and make juices so they can start small businesses. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
The training program is funded by the Japanese Embassy in Juba in collaboration with the South Sudan Ministries of Trade and Industry and Gender, Child and Social Welfare. The program is expected to continue for 12 months and targets women in the Mangaten and Kasaba neighborhoods of Juba. 50-year-old Elizabeth Chol Majok has been living in the Mangaten IDP camp for several months after fleeing fighting in her home state of Upper Nile. Speaking in Arabic, Majok says, she and the other IDPs at the camp are grateful to the Japanese government.
I thank these people who came from abroad to give us work. We don't have work. When we fled Upper Nile, we came to Mangaten. We are the ones to take care of our children, but we can't do that without work.
Third-year-old Nyachan Philip, who is also from the former Upper Nile state, says in Arabic that she will use the training for expanding her business opportunities in the future.
When they ask us to sign up for the program, we ask them, what is this program about? They said, we will show you how to grow plants and teach you baking skills. We said, this is an excellent program. If we train, then become certified, and we can get hired to cook food and bake cakes for weddings and other occasions and make money.
Kia Masahiko, the outgoing Japanese ambassador to South Sudan, says his government will continue to empower poor South Sudanese women through funding various projects.
It is my hope that this livelihood and agribusiness, which are both are very important, will have an impact of very grassroots people, both these residents here and the IDP community, so that this will impress many of us, and this initial small step will expand in a better way for the future.
Speaking in Arabic, 24-year-old Margaret Fita says the training will help her learn how to bake for gatherings.
I would love to join this cooking training. As women, we are good at cooking. I also grew up in a village where I used to grow kudra and other stuffs.
Jubek State Minister of Agriculture Rose Paulino says IDPs and the host communities in Mangaten and Kasaba will participate in the program.
We are hosting the internal displaced. We are also, as Jubek State, we are hosting the Republic of South Sudan. And we also have some of our people, communities who are living with the host community. They are also going to benefit from this project.
Ram Singh, Chief Technical Advisor at the United Nations Industrial Development Organization, says his agency will provide equipment and toolkits for the women enrolled in the program.
This project will benefit about 500 beneficiaries, and we have already prepared the groundwork for starting a training program. We are starting training on food processing and business management from tomorrow.
The Japan government funds several development and recovery projects in South Sudan through the Japan International Cooperation Agency, or JICA. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Will the new Kenyan elections be postponed next month? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People people speak out on important questions. The question today,
is there something you vow to never do again?
One thing I vow never to do again is not to take any important decision or step without praying about it first, because I know God has good plans for me.
I vow never to cheat on someone, knowingly or unknowingly, because if someone does that to me, I won't feel good.
Human being cannot say never, never and never. You never know, you could be tempted to do it some other time.
The party life, I'm trying to quit the party life, but I don't know how long it will take me to. But at least it's not a month, I haven't gone out.
I was a smoker for the last 20 years, but I leave smoking. So I don't want ever in my life to smoke again. Smoking is deadly.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we are talking about stopping the spread of non-communicable diseases. The World Health Organization reports some progress is being made in reducing premature deaths from non-communicable diseases, but it says much more needs to be done to save the lives of nearly 40 million people who die every year from preventable causes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
In this latest global assessment, the World Health Organization reports cardiovascular and chronic respiratory diseases, cancers, and diabetes continue to be the world's biggest killers. Every year, it says 15 million adults in the most productive period of their lives, between the age of 30 and 70, will die prematurely. The biggest risk factors are tobacco, the harmful use of alcohol, unhealthy diets, and lack of physical activity. WHO Director for the Prevention of Non-Communicable Diseases, Douglas Betcher, says the world is not on track to meet the Sustainable Development Goal of cutting premature NCD deaths by one-third by 2030.
The window of opportunity to save lives is closing. This is playing out before our eyes in many ways, including increasing numbers of people, particularly children and adolescents suffering from obesity, overweight, and diabetes. If we don't take action now to protect people from NCDs, we will condemn today's and tomorrow's youth to lives of ill health and reduced economic opportunities.
Despite common perceptions, Betcher tells VOA, premature deaths from non-communicable diseases are not just a rich country problem.
80% of the deaths are in countries that are already often stressed. Their health systems are stressed with the usual conventional burdens of disease, communicable diseases, maternal child health problems, and then this is an added extremely large burden for the health system.
WHO reports Costa Rica and Iran lead the 10 best-performing countries in reducing deaths from non-communicable diseases. It says six countries have achieved no progress at all. Five are in Africa: Angola, Equatorial Guinea, Guinea-Bissau, Sao Tome Principe, and South Sudan. The sixth country is Micronesia in the Western Pacific. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya is scheduled to hold its new presidential poll on October 17th, but there is already talk of postponement due to technical issues and arguments over the Electoral Commission. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court has come under fresh fire from ruling party supporters. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has the latest.
The election drama continues in Kenya. Police fired tear gas Tuesday to disperse ruling Jubilee Party supporters demonstrating outside the Supreme Court, demanding the removal of two justices. The protesters say the justices met with opposition attorneys before the Supreme Court overturned the victory of their candidate, Uhuru Kenyatta, in the August 8th presidential election. Chief Justice Maraga spoke to reporters, saying the court will not be intimidated.
The judiciary, as currently constituted, cannot and shall not guarantee a particular outcome to any individual. We call upon Kenyans of goodwill to stand up for the independence of the judiciary and the rule of law. On our part, we are prepared to pay the ultimate price to protect the Constitution and the rule of law.
The Chief Justice announced on September 1st that a new poll should take place within 60 days due to what he called irregularities and illegalities by the Electoral Commission in the transmission of election results. The Supreme Court has until Friday to release the full details of what went wrong in August. That will leave the Electoral Commission, or IEBC, less than a month to correct issues ahead of the rerun election scheduled for October 17th. There is already talk of a postponement. University of Nairobi lecturer Herman Manyora says the election can be organized within the constitutional time limit.
Not necessarily on October 17th, but I'm convinced within the 60 days provided for by the Constitution, we shall have the election. It may be pushed maybe a week, maybe a 24th, maybe 31st, but within the 60 days, yes.
However, opposition leader Raila Odinga and his NASA coalition have threatened to boycott the polls if demands like the removal of key IEBC officials are not met. Adding to the challenges, the French IT company that supplied the August election systems has told the IEBC the systems need to be reinstalled and therefore will not be ready by October 17th. Given these issues, political commentator Barak Muluka questions whether the election will take place even by the end of October. If it does and NASA boycotts it, he says, there could be bigger problems.
Because I don't think that NASA would stay out and say, okay, so you went on with the election, we stayed out because we didn't think the ground was level enough, but carry on. I don't think they would sit down and say that they have lost out and they would be satisfied with that. I suspect that we would see a new wave of activities, perhaps not very pleasant ones.
The ruling Jubilee Party has said the rerun should proceed as scheduled on October 17th. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Goo by Magic System. Listening to Magic System with the song Goo. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for being here. We'd like to hear what you think about our show. Drop us a line by email at southsudan@voanews.com or find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.